Here's a quick word from our football educational partners over at the Scouting Academy.
Listen, we've said it all the time. If you love the analysis and you're passionate about football, then you really need to check out the Scouting Academy. Whether you're a football coach, aspiring writer, or even aspiring football agent, the Scouting Academy is really a perfect place for you to learn and develop your skills as an analyst. With curriculum that spans over 375 years of coaching and personnel experience, the Scouting Academy offers you a 16-week online course that you can tailor and build to meet your needs and your interests. Whether you're learning about wide receivers or defensive linemen, you can make the experience what you want it to be. Listen, I've said it to you on this podcast many times. I've spent my own money, my own time, and time away from my friends and family because I am just this passionate about this game. And the Scouting Academy is the place where I really feel like I've learned the most I've ever learned about the game of football. It's made me a better analyst. It's made me a better person in terms of the coaching I do on the field. I can't say enough great things about it. If you have any questions about the Scouting Academy, please don't hesitate to reach out to Dan Hatman on Twitter or reach out to the Scouting Academy online via email. I'm open to all questions as well. Heck, I'm still even a student there myself. Please don't hesitate to reach out. I really think that once you learn all the tools and gain the knowledge that they have to offer, I really think you're going to be absolutely excited about the game of football again.
This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast.
This is where it all counts. This is why we're here. This is why each one of us are here.
And now, here's your host.
And we are back. This is the Saturday to Sunday Football Podcast. I am Paul Perticchese, and joining me as always is Mr. Matt Caraccio. Matt, welcome back.
Paul, I cannot believe it. Like we say every week, I mean, it seems like I can't believe something every week, but I cannot believe it this week. We're getting to the end of the actual college football season. Yes, we're bowling, but more importantly, you can already start to hear it. You can hear it in the footprints and footsteps that is the Twitterverse, in that social media world. The draft is coming. It's coming, and people are starting to get really into it. So I'm really excited to see what we can look for this upcoming week for bowl games as we really start to head into the college football playoffs as some of those marquee names take the field for now and for in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the time of year. We love the college football season. But once the college football season ends, man, it's like draft season is as long now as the actual college football season. And the All-Star Games and the Combine and all the pre-draft stuff, we dig that. You know, we bring to you wall-to-wall coverage constantly on all that stuff. So we're getting ramped up for that. You know, but before we get there, we got to take a look ahead at the upcoming bowl games this week. A lot of prospects to keep an eye on. We got some declarations into the NFL draft. You got some things to talk about in the Devy Slam. Obviously, we'll close out with the NFL Rookie Report, as we always do during the season episodes. So let's start right at the top with the NFL draft report. The big news of the most recent 24 hours is that quarterback from Oregon, Justin Herbert, has decided that he is going to return to the Ducks and play out his senior year. All year, that was the whispers that he was going to stay there. He loved being a Duck. His brother was going to come play there. He wanted to stay and finish out his career there. And I honestly kept saying, I don't believe it. He's not going to pass up being a top five pick. I think I came on record last week talking about Gil Brandt's comments, saying that Gil Brandt said, I'm not a betting man, but if I was, I would bet Herbert comes out and is a top five pick. You know, and Gil Brandt's not a guy just to send out a tweet for the sake of it, but all in all, the rumors were true. Herbert's going back to Oregon. Major impact that has on the NFL draft, on the quarterback needy teams, and then on college football season next year. So, Matt, thoughts on Herbert going back to school? Surprise? Because now he throws himself in the mix of another year of scrutiny and to be compared to from and any other quarterbacks that come out of the woodworks to be top, you know, 10 type prospects potentially next year, when this year he was locked into top five. So while, yes, I think he can grow as a player another year in college, I'm not sure his draft status could get any higher than it would have been this year.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Paul, I'm really kind of surprised just because, I mean, listen, I'm not about to sit here and tell you that family and understanding being a, you know, a supportive member of one's family isn't important. But you have to sit here and just at least wonder for a moment, you know, we're talking about a lot of potential money that could have been made, life-altering, life-changing money that could have set up him and his family for years to come. Because I seriously doubt this young man would have fallen out of the top 12 in this draft. I just don't see a reality where that would have happened just because of the position, because of the ability on the field. This is a player that would have gone that high. So it does seem a little quizzical to me. It doesn't necessarily seem like something that I predicted. I mean, I know you were you and Gil Brandt are now, you know, in debt in Vegas right now for your odds, but I think that it was a really good thought, because I just couldn't imagine that somebody would pass up literally what seemed like a foregone conclusion that he would have been a top 12 pick. And he did. So, you know, maybe there's more to come from this young man. I think if we're going to be purely developmental, yes, more time behind the kind of the reins of a quarterback at a top university like Oregon is going to be great for him. Skill development, developing his overall arsenal as a quarterback, it's good stuff. Not going to tell you that's not important. It is. But you already would have been a top 12 pick. And that's not even, there's no question about that. I'm left a little bit dumbfounded, but you know what? Congratulations to this young man. I wish him the best. I wish everybody in his family the best. May they all benefit greatly from this choice, and may he see his fortunes rise even further.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the fact that he's going to stay there and get his degree is amazing. I mean, we're educators, so you know, we take that very seriously. It's just that I guess we're so accustomed now to players not doing this. It used to be somewhat normal for quarterbacks to do this. Peyton Manning didn't come out when he could have. Eli Manning didn't come out as early as he could have. Andrew Luck didn't come out as early as he could have. But over the years, we've seen Sam Darnold, you know, we've seen Jameis Winston, we've seen guys come out, you know, where maybe they could have, you know, stayed an extra year and benefited from it. But we've just grown so accustomed to most players not doing it. So I think it took me for surprise a little bit. I think it took a lot of people for surprise, you know, but hopefully he comes back. He has a great year. Maybe they compete for a national championship. And most importantly, hopefully he stays healthy. You know, I think that's the thing that is most probably nerve wracking about it. But I think he's a great talent. It'll be interesting to see kind of where he falls in the next year's quarterback class. I still think he'll be one of the top quarterbacks in that class. I just don't think he'll be the top quarterback in that class if Tua comes out. And I thought this year he had a strong likelihood of being the top quarterback in this class. So fascinating nonetheless. It's going to be fun to watch him progress and develop next year. I think all eyes are going to be fixated on him of, does he improve? You know, if people had some concerns this year about certain areas here or there, you know, people are going to be looking and expecting him to have show growth and development in those areas if he's staying another year in college. So it's going to be fun to watch, break down his film in the summer and kind of get ready for college football season next year and see if any thoughts and opinions have changed on Herbert. A couple other news here in the NFL draft report, a couple other early entries into the 2019 NFL draft at the skill players. At the running back position, Darrell Henderson out of Memphis, the junior, 5'9", 200 pounds, really productive career at Henderson. Really productive career at Memphis. I think Henderson is a guy who potentially could be in the day two mix or early day three. Good prospect there out of Memphis. Devin Singletary, the running back out of Florida Atlantic, 5'9", 200 pounds. He's been getting some good publicity. I think it was Lance Zierlein really was pumping him up and talking about his ability as a runner. Singletary is another guy, most likely day two type prospect. I love how hard he runs. While he's only 5'9", 200, he runs with an intensity. He runs with some strength and power. He's got some quickness to his game. Singletary is a player who, again, in a little bit of an unknown running back class, Singletary is a guy who could emerge as a guy who's taken in the top 60 picks or on round three. I think he's definitely gone before the end of day two, and he's going to be added to a mix, probably in like a committee guy, maybe a little bit more than that at the NFL level, but definitely could add a skill set and dimension to an NFL backfield. At the wide receiver position, Preston Williams, the redshirt junior out of Colorado, 6'3", 210 pounds. He's declared for the draft. Another guy who potentially a top 100 pick. Greg Dortch, the redshirt sophomore out of Wake Forest, 5'9", 170 pounds. I haven't seen a lot of him. Got to get eyes on him in the pre-draft process here. And then tight end Dawson Knox, the junior out of Ole Miss. So Ole Miss is losing all of their playmakers, from DK Metcalf to AJ Brown. DeMarcus Lodge is graduating. And now Dawson Knox, you know, this is a guy that some people were hyping up before the season started. Not a big statistical output year, but a lot of people love his athleticism. He's really athletic, can attack the seam, can get vertical, can make plays after the catch. Dawson Knox is a guy who's probably going to test that really well in the pre-draft process and could be a guy who ends up also being a top 100 pick when all is said and done. Matt, any thoughts on some of those early entrants that I had? Is there one or two names there that kind of piqued your interest?
Well, let's start quickly. Just a couple quick thoughts. Greg Dortch, for example, you know, he's a player that I first kind of came across earlier this season. I think our former co-host and podcast founder, Nick Whalen, was mentioning him earlier about how he was really intrigued by his game earlier in the season. And I had a chance to watch him a little bit. And although I didn't kind of, you know, finalize any thoughts on him, I got to tell you, man, initially watching him play the game, you know, from the slot position where you have the affordances of space and open field, he's definitely a guy that's pretty skillful in understanding how to manipulate and destabilize defenders and get his opportunity to, again, make and create space. And I think that's something that's obviously very useful in today's NFL, being in a spread offense where you're going to be afforded space just by the virtue of the fact of the formations you'll be in. Dortch definitely has that skill set, very much like a Stanley Morgan, if you think about it that way, very much like a Hunter Renfro, if you want to put it in that basket. You could talk about that he's way better than that. That's fine. I'm not arguing about where they sit on the kind of the hierarchy or spectrum of skill. What I'm talking about is essentially they're in that same archetype of player, that they play within space very well. They know how to use space that's created for them. They're good at manipulating space. They're excellent route runners. These are the types of players that I think are very interesting, especially given the fact that we're moving towards an up-tempo spread scheme in the NFL as being kind of the standard and the norm. So very interesting there. Also, just to talk a little bit about it, you mentioned Devin Singletary. I'm tired of talking about contact balance. And to all those people out there that talk about contact balance, I argue to come and bring it to me, because honestly, contact balance and bringing it to it is, I think it's a good term, but I think that we got to look deeper, because I think it does a disservice to players like Singletary, because it's not just about his ability to take a hit and keep going. It's about how he functions within collisions. You look at a guy like him, and it's not just that he can take a hit and keep going. It's about the fact that he actually relishes and flourishes in collisions. He knows how to take a hit, reshape within the actual collision, and keep accelerating. And he can do this regardless of where the hit is coming from, front, back, side, behind. He's a player that's really good in riding contact, using contact to kind of ricochet or catapult him to the next level. If you think about spin moves, not all spin moves are created equally. So again, he's the perfect poster child for why we need to talk about contact fidelity and stop using contact balance, because he does so much more within collisions that make him, Paulie, what is he, 5'9"?
Yeah, 5'9".
And what's his total weight again?
200.
Okay, so you're not talking about a monstrous back, but when he runs bigger than he is. Well, what does that mean? He's a perfect poster child for why contact balance is an antiquated term. We need to change the way we look at it. And I think Devin Singletary is the man to lead that charge, because, yeah, he runs bigger. Let me tell you what he does. He runs very well and is very skillful in collisions. And we got to watch those players, because those are guys that are going to be great runners. Leonard Fournette, skillful in collisions. He's a player that you got to watch, because I think that says something about what he'll do at the next level. Think Marshawn Lynch, Marion Barber. Think about those types of players. Peyton Barber. Think about those types of players. That's what I think Singletary could be. I think he's a Peyton Barber style player, and maybe a little bit more, but very interesting. Great names. I'm excited about this draft season. Let's keep going.
Yeah. So, yeah, listen, I'm right there with you. I think Singletary, I think people use the term contact balance because, again, it's the lingo that's been there for so long that people are like, yeah, I see him absorb contact well and then keep running. I see him break tackles.
But it's so limiting. But it's so limiting, is my point, because how do you distinguish one guy from another guy? Like, if you say he has good contact, how do you begin to distinguish why Devin Singletary is, let's say, better at contact balance than, let's say, Miles Gaskins? How do you begin to do it? And don't tell me the story about size. How do we talk about the trait called contact balance and really distinguish the actual ingredients that make one player better than another? That's why I think it's not a bad term. It's just limiting.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think in my lifetime, no player has had contact balance better than Marshawn Lynch. He is the greatest I've ever seen at his ability to absorb contact, deliver punishment, and still make things happen. But you're right. How do you distinguish between Marshawn Lynch, who maybe is the best ever at it in our generation, compared to someone else who's good at it, but again, using the word elite is doesn't really fit well, I think, when we're talking about, you know, contact balance. Some could do more and some could do less with it. And I think that's what you're talking about. I think it's a great point to constantly talk about as we're talking about some of these running backs, you know, for the upcoming NFL draft. So let's go to you, Matt, with a quick Devy slant. Any underclassmen news that we need to keep on our fingertips and kind of know what's going on across the country?
No, I mean, I think that, here's the things. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, all's quiet right now. A couple of things that did happen that didn't happen, so to speak. Jaren Williams is not transferring from Miami. He's staying at Miami. So I think that's a very interesting and big keep for the Miami Hurricanes. Jaren Williams was one of our top quarterbacks coming out of the previous high school class here at Saturday and Sunday. We were really excited about what he could bring to the game. Again, bringing very much that modern, if we have to call it modern, just to give it a name, that modern kind of skill set of a QB. Jaren Williams is staying put at Miami. I think that's a big keep for Miami long term. Mark Richt is probably really happy about that. Looking a little bit into the underclassmen, talking specifically about the high school recruits coming out, early signing periods and everything to that, like kind of settling in. I've been doing a lot of work right now on the running backs, and I got to tell you, you know, It's no doubt. Listen, I give props to all the wonderful institutions out there, 24/7, ESPN, Rivals. I mean, these guys are pros at what they do because they're pros at what they do. And even though I don't subscribe to their rankings, you know, I want to do the work on my own. I got to tell you, man, guys like Trey Sanders, there's a reason why he's near the top of the boards everywhere that you look. Trey Sanders is a great instinctual running back. And I think this running back class is going to be very interesting with the likes of Noah Kane and John Emery and Jerrion Ely. I mean, there's some really interesting players. I like Zach Charbonnet. He's really interesting as well. And then even moving into the wide receivers, I mean, there are just so many players outside of the Jordan Hasselwoods that I think that people are going to be super, super excited to see. I mean, literally, you look at this guy on tape, and we're talking about guys like Greg Dortch right now, and it's hard not to look at a player like Garrett Wilson and say, you know, Garrett Wilson is going to join the Ohio State Buckeyes at 6'1", 181, and he's going to be a tremendously interesting player in terms of what he does in space, how he creates space, manipulates defenders, and so on and so forth. He's going to be a tremendous, interesting person. So all I'm saying is, Paul, the tree of talent, the tree of skill at the high school position is just as full as ever before. And I think specifically talking about those running backs and wide receivers, I think we're going to see a lot of interesting players come into the fold soon enough.
Yeah, I mean, I know you love this stuff, and I really don't start getting into it until those All-Star games, and you'll give me a watch list of Paul. Make sure when you watch the high school All-Star games, you're keeping an eye on this player, and this player. And
then high school All-Star games, they're coming. They're coming. Great point, Paul.
And that's usually my first initial exposure to these guys to start kind of seeing what you're seeing a little bit. And it's exciting. This is such a crazy time of the year with the high school All-Star games, the college All-Star games, the pre-draft process starting. It's a fun time to be someone that loves to evaluate and analyze these prospects at all different levels, you know, hence the name Around the Country, because we're looking, you know, at high school and college and underclassmen and draft eligible guys and NFL rookies. And we're kind of hitting the spectrum across the board.
And Paul, not to belabor this point any further, but you really did bring up a good point. I mean, some studs that stood out at the Under Armour All-American game, as well as the American All-Star game that they had out there. The two All-Star games, the two prominent All-Star games, the players that came out of that, just to give you an idea, Adrian Martinez, who is now the current quarterback in Nebraska, was a real stud in those games. Jalen Waddle was a stud in those games and showed it in everything that he did. Amon-Ra St. Brown was a stud in those games, has continued to show that. In terms of running backs, really, in terms of running backs, there was a little bit of changeover from running backs, but the quarterback position, you know, with the Trevor Lawrences and the Justin Fields and the Jaren Williams and the JT Daniels, all those prominent quarterback prospects, they showed in those games. So if you're looking, and I think, Paul, it was a great point, and just as a final note in the Devy slant, if you're looking for a crash course in the top athletes in terms of the skill position players when it comes to the high school realm, you could do a lot worse than making your first entry point into these players themselves, those high school All-American games. Those are the ones to take a look at. I think they give you a great insight and window into what the future might hold.
Yeah, I mean, and again, and use me as the jumping off point. That, you know, obviously I love all these prospect stuff, but I don't have time to get into the high school film and stuff like that. And, you know, you really carried the lead on the, you know, the freshman notebook. But for me, this is really my first entry point into it. And I think it really does. I mean, I was able to watch those games last year and see some of these prospects and immediately know they were going to be big impact players at the collegiate level and then eventually the NFL. And we're already seeing some of them, you know, have huge impact and success at the collegiate level, impacting, you know, their teams, you know, winning and losing dramatically, impacting the national championship picture, you know. And we're going to be talking about some of these players here as we kind of transition into the tail of the tape, which is really going to be an extended bowl preview for the remaining bowl games that are left. So, Matt, how I'm going to do this is we're going to go by day. I'm going to run through the games, name a player or two I'm most excited about, and then you either can piggyback on one of those players or bring up another guy that you might be intrigued with. So starting with Friday, because in the last podcast, we went through the Thursday game. So if you're listening to this on Thursday, we talked about the Thursday games last week. But on Friday, we start with the Music City Bowl. That's got Purdue versus Auburn. Guys to be watching, obviously quarterback Jared Stidham will close out his Auburn career in this game, try to end it on a high note, and then carry that success into the Senior Bowl week. And then on the other side, freshman Rondell Moore. I know you mentioned him recently, 5'9", 174 pounds, has had an elite first season here for Purdue. Going to be a guy we're hearing a lot about over the next couple years. Also on Friday, the Camping World Bowl between West Virginia and Syracuse. Will Greer has decided to skip this and just prepare for the NFL draft. His running mate, though, and top wide receiver, David Sills, is expected to play. He'll be the guy I'll be watching most on West Virginia. Again, dominated at the collegiate level. Still have some questions about his separation ability and his route running at the NFL level. And then on Syracuse side, quarterback Eric Dungy, dual threat, 6'3", 226, you know, suffered a serious injury a couple weeks ago. People were uncertain whether or not he was going to play in the final game of the year and then the bowl game, but he was able to come back, going to be able to end out his career at Syracuse in this bowl game, where I think Syracuse has a real shot at pulling the upset without West Virginia having Will Greer. And then the Alamo Bowl, really intrigued for this one. Iowa State versus Washington State. Obviously, Washington State, led by Gardner Minshew, the quarterback, will be seeing him at the Senior Bowl. But on the Iowa State side, I'm excited to watch Akeem Butler, 6'5", 225 pounds, redshirt junior, going to be in the NFL draft. And then running back David Montgomery, guy we've talked a lot about this year as one of the top running backs in this class. So, Matt, those are the games on Friday for this upcoming week. Anybody of intrigue of the names I mentioned or somebody who I left out who you're really excited to watch?
Yeah, I think the two players that stand out to me that you just mentioned, I think a lot of this has to do with I think they've kind of fallen, continued. Again, it's what we've talked about previously, Paul, on other shows about how players that get a lot of early hype tend to fall back underneath the cover, so to speak. You don't hear much about them anymore. And I think that there could be an absolute reawakening to David Montgomery as a prospect and what he brings to the table, not just because of what he is as a talent, but because of what he does. Again, I keep pushing this narrative of skill. It's what he brings at the skill. It's what skill level he brings to the position that I think is underrated. He's so skillful as a runner. What he can do and how adaptive he is in open space is incredible. What he can do when in tight spaces versus when he's given plenty of space is really just incredible because of the amount of variability and versatility he has in his running game. It's what he can do when he's in collisions versus what he can do to create collisions that are advantageous for him. And it's what he can do, obviously, to avoid collisions entirely. But he's a very, very interesting prospect. He's a great prospect and one that I think really people need to reawaken themselves to. And you already mentioned it, Rondale Moore. Rondale Moore is just a guy that I think that if I were in a Devy draft right now, Rondale Moore is easily in my top three must-haves at any position. And that's over the Travis Etienne's. That's right there with the top quarterbacks in the country. He's really one of those must-haves right now. Because what he did at the position this year, it's not what he did. It's how he did it. It's how he showed such a deep toolbox of skill in terms of what he could do as a route runner, in terms of what he could do after the catch, in terms of how good he was in contested situations, manipulating, controlling his body. He's really a player that I think people need to get on their teams now. So from the Devy perspective, Rondale Moore, every day, all day, must watch television right now this bowl season. Enjoy the show, get the popcorn. And David Montgomery, it's time we reawaken ourselves to him as being probably one of, if not the best running back in this class.
Yeah, I mean, Montgomery flying under the radar has been surprising to me. I think in the pre-draft process, he's going to win people over. They're going to see his receiving ability, which has gone underutilized this year, and I think that's going to be one of the calling cards that really make people intrigued with him. Let's take this to Saturday's games. I'm going to split this up into the three non-playoff games and then the two playoff games. We start with the Peach Bowl, Florida versus Michigan. For Florida's side, running back Jordan Scarlett, who was suspended all of the previous season, has came back this year, been a part of a two-man backfield there, is the guy to watch on the Gators. On the Michigan side, they're going to be without a lot of their star players, but they will have quarterback Shea Patterson, who also announced that he is not going to declare for the NFL draft, so he will be back for his final season there in Michigan. And also keep an eye on, underclassman stud wide receiver Donovan Peoples-Jones. In the Belk Bowl, you have South Carolina versus Virginia. No Debo Samuel in this one, preparing for the NFL draft, but keep a close eye on his running mate there at wide receiver, Brian Edwards, one of the top underclassmen wide receiver prospects in the country. It doesn't sound like he's going to declare for the NFL draft, so he's going to go into the summer probably as one of the top wide receiver prospects in the country. And then Jake Bentley, quarterback out of South Carolina, also does not sound like he is going to declare. So he's going to come back next year as, I think, one of the top senior quarterback prospects in the country as well. And then the Arizona Bowl, Arkansas State versus Nevada. Again, a game that not a lot of people are going to have on their radar. But if you have eyes on it, keep an eye on Arkansas State quarterback Justice Hansen, dual threat. Passed for over 3,000 yards and 27 touchdowns this year, and also had 400 yards rushing and 6 touchdowns. He's almost worth price of admission in the game as itself, so keep a close eye on him. Matt, any thoughts on any of the players in those three games that I just mentioned?
Well, you know I'm going to say Brian Edwards. Brian Edwards. He was preseason, assuming he was coming out this year, which he isn't, unfortunately. Even when I finished all of my analysis and I ranked them by skill, not by talent, not by what they could be, but where I thought they were right now in terms of the skill level they bring as movers on the field of play, Brian Edwards was a top three player for me. And there was a lot of argument in my mind going back and forth between him and Debo Samuel being literally could have been one and two. So I that's how highly I think of them. So Debo Samuel we won't have a chance to see, but Brian Edwards might be one of the, if not the most skillful players in the country. Yes, more skillful than DK Metcalf. Sorry, everybody. That's just my opinion. I make no apologies for it. But I think he's just as skillful, if not as skillful as DK Metcalf. And also, just like you said earlier, I think the Michigan side of things, Tariq Black, keep your eyes on Tariq Black. Keep your eyes out for him. Remember, he's still there. He could still play. I would argue that he might be one of the most skillful wide receivers left in the underclassmen in the country. He's one of those guys that just hasn't been healthy. Now that he is, let's see how that goes for him. So those would be the players, Paul, that would jump out to me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Very skilled player. You know, it's going to be interesting to kind of see how Edwards emerges, entering next season. Is he looked upon as one of the top wide receivers in the country, or do some of these sophomores that I know I'm very high on, guys like Jerry Jeudy, T. Higgins, do they kind of emerge as the lead dog in next year's class as well? I'm actually going to hold the playoff games to we'll finish with the playoff games. I'm going to take this to the New Year's Eve, which is Monday. The games that are being played, you have the Military Bowl between Cincinnati and Virginia Tech. got to be watching is freshman quarterback Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati. This past year, 2,400 yards, 19 touchdowns, another 565 yards, and five touchdowns on the ground. Dual threat guy. Keep an eye on him and kind of introduce yourself to him if you have not seen him play at all this year. In the Sun Bowl, Stanford versus Pittsburgh. No Bryce Love getting ready for the NFL draft. To me, still very stunning that Bryce Love is not going to be at the Senior Bowl. Bryce Love, who last year, you know, was talked about as much as any prospect in the country, this year has really flew under the radar. So he won't be playing in this bowl game. He's not going to be at the Senior Bowl. Might have made a mistake, it seems, in going back to school for this final year. The guy who's going to be drawing most of the attention is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Some people have as a top five, top 10 wide receiver in this class. I still have some concerns about his ability to separate and create space, but he's great at the catch point. His ability to go up and get it, going to intrigue NFL teams for that reason, and his size combination as well. I think more of a round three to round five type prospect. Some people are much higher on him than that. The Red Box Bowl between Michigan State and Oregon. Obviously, Justin Herbert, going to be keeping a close eye on him since his announcement over the last 24 hours. For Michigan State, Brian Lewerke is a game time decision due to an injury. He was a guy a lot of people were pumping up this year. I just didn't really see it. I saw his average skill set. I think he's a day three backup type quarterback at the next level. I'll be keeping my eyes on LJ Scott, the running back, going to be at the Senior Bowl. I think he's a day three type prospect in the NFL draft, between the tackles type runner, average receiver, runs hard, but no trait that stands out in terms of, you know, an elite type trait that I think is going to really make NFL teams, you know, push him up higher in the draft board. But nonetheless, really great college career, going to end it hopefully well in this bowl game. The Liberty Bowl between Missouri and Oklahoma State. No Justice Hill for Oklahoma State, so all eyes will be fixated on the Missouri duo of Drew Locke, the quarterback, and Emmanuel Hall. With the news of Herbert going back to school, Drew Locke becomes one of the top quarterback prospects in the country. Possible he's the second quarterback taken after Dwayne Haskins, assuming Dwayne Haskins declares for the draft. And then Emmanuel Hall, we've talked a lot about, vertical threat, you know, can get deep. Biggest issue with him is, you know, drops. Are they concentration drops? Are they poor hands? You know, that's the question mark on Emmanuel Hall, but he's going to be a guy that NFL teams are intrigued with also. And then two other games on New Year's Eve, the Holiday Bowl between Northwestern and Utah. Obviously, quarterback Clayton Thorson of Northwestern will be the guys I'll be keeping my eyes on. Utah running back Zach Moss obviously suffered a season-ending injury, won't be available. Still waiting word on whether or not he's going to declare early for the NFL draft. I know he has some big fans out there. And then the Tax Slayer Bowl, NC State versus Texas A&M. No Kelvin Harmon, also getting ready for the NFL draft. I'll be keeping my eyes on quarterback Ryan Finley for NC State, and then Travion Williams, running back out of Texas A&M, who I really think has emerged with a breakthrough season this past year. So, Matt, any thoughts on the New Year's Eve bowl games?
No, I think you hit on all the major guys. I do think Bryce Love is going to be, it's just outstanding that that's just not happening in terms of him being available for the All-Star games and not playing in the All-Star games. That is crazy. He's a player that I still think, you know, and I think this goes back to the points where we talk about this evaluation process this upcoming season. As you guys are watching these, just because a player may not be what we call, you know, I guess I want to say is dominant or transcendent, however you want to look at it, it doesn't mean that their role on the right team and the right offense can't be substantial. So just consider that. I mean, you look at Adam Humphries. I mean, Adam Humphries was an unheralded player coming out of college, and look at what he's doing now within his role on Tampa Bay. And I think that he's a poster child for that type of thinking, where if there's a skill set, and we talk about this, you know, the idea of the ways he wins, if these guys can get on the right team, their roles can be substantial and their value can be substantial. And I think it's just interesting to consider that when we're watching some of these bowl games and some of these other classmen.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree with that. If we take this to the New Year's Day bowl games, I understand this is going to be after the playoff game, so people, you know, all of these games might get a little bit lost. There's a lot of good games on New Year's Day this year. Make sure you're in front of the TV watching some of these, even if it's just for a prospect perspective. you know, the Outback Bowl between Mississippi State and Iowa. While the top prospect on Iowa, Noah Fant, decided to skip the game and prepare for the draft. Nate Stanley, the quarterback, a guy some people like. I think more of a late day free type player. But the guy I really want to watch is the other tight end, TJ Hockenson, who is getting a lot of publicity. Where if he comes out, he could also be a top 100 pick in this NFL draft. I'm going to be watching him. On the other side, Mississippi State, Nick Fitzgerald, again, ends his collegiate career. You know, he's been a great collegiate quarterback, a lot of big wins for Mississippi State. Can he go out on a high note? How his game translates to the next level, I think, is suspect, but he's got the size, he's got the athleticism, he's got the arm talent, but the accuracy, decision-making is stuff that's still got to be worked on and refined. But I think he'll intrigue teams enough to make him a day three pick nonetheless. The Fiesta Bowl between LSU and UCF. Obviously, no Mackenzie Milton, who suffered a really serious injury a couple weeks back. He'll be replaced by freshman Darrell Mack, who exploded in the conference championship game with 6 total touchdowns, over 300 yards passing, over 50 yards rushing. And on the LSU side, keep an eye on freshman wide receiver. I know Matt loves him. Wide receiver Terrence Marshall. In the Citrus Bowl, Kentucky, Penn State, this is the battle. Keep an eye on the running games. Benny Snell for Kentucky, and then Miles Sanders for Penn State. Both of these guys, going to be playing at the next level. I think Miles Sanders has the potential to be a top 100 pick. I think Benny Snell, more of an early day three type guy, grinder between the tackles, strong, powerful guy. The Rose Bowl between Washington and Ohio State. Lots of prospects to watch. Miles Gaskins and Jake Browning from the Washington side. And then the Ohio State side. Is it Dwayne Haskins' last game in college? Paris Campbell, J.K. Dobbins, Mike Weber. You know, all the cast of characters we've been talking about all year. Ohio State. A lot of skilled guys there that are going to be playing at the next level. And then to end New Year's Day, the Sugar Bowl between Texas and Georgia. You know, for Texas, we talked about them a little bit last episode. The wide receivers, Colin Johnson, little Jordan Humphrey, to keep a close eye on in that one. For the Georgia side, you know, we got Riley Ridley, we got Jake Fromm, we got Holyfield, we got DeAndre Swift, Isaac Nauta. You know, the list goes on and on with the Georgia players in terms of who to keep a close eye on in this game. Matt, any thoughts here on any of these games on New Year's Day? A lot of intriguing matchups, a lot of intriguing prospects.
Well, I mean, not to backtrack, but to backtrack in order to kind of tell the story of what I'm hoping for, you know, TCU and the TCU game in the Cheez-It Bowl that they had recently, you know, we saw the likes of Justin Rogers, who is a quarterback that, again, we were really high on here at Saturday, Sunday, coming out of high school, got a little bit of action. And I'm hoping for something similar, you know, with Georgia, starting to see some of these players kind of going deep into the roster. You know, I'm hoping to see some players kind of get a little bit more work, looking for some of these really deep on the roster underclassmen in Texas come up there and play a little bit more. LSU again, Carl Edwards-Helaire, you know, want to see it. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, see him play. Those are guys that I'm excited about. Penn State, obviously the Miles Sanders action, but we see a little bit of Slade, you know, kind of come into the game. Maybe he gets a little work and starts playing. Like you talked about with Kentucky and Benny Snell, that would be great. But I'm talking, with Ohio State, seeing, like you said, the likes of the Mike Webbers, but even going deeper into their roster and seeing what else they have. Maybe we see a little Tate Martell action come out, just to give Dwayne Haskins a little bit of a breather if the game kind of goes one way or another. So it might be just interesting to see in some of these really deep rosters, some of these programs that have turnstiles when it comes to five-star recruits, seeing how deep they go on the roster, looking for maybe the emergence of next year's players. That's kind of the way I'm looking at some of these games.
And one other guy I forgot to mention, I know we talked about him a couple episodes ago. I'm really fascinated to see how Shane Ellinger looks against Georgia and that team. Ellinger's a guy who could be getting a lot of attention in August going into next college football year. If he ends on a strong note, if he goes out and beats Georgia and that team, I think Ellinger's a guy who could be in the mix as a guy we're talking about highly next year going into next year's college football season.
He's been very good this year. Very good. He's taken massive, massive steps this year compared to where he was as a freshman. Huge steps.
Yeah, and he could be part of the reason why maybe Texas is really in for a big-time season upcoming next year. So let's finish out the tail of the tape with the two playoff games. I know we took an early look weeks ago, but you obviously got on Saturday Clemson-Notre Dame and then Alabama-Oklahoma, the big storylines. Can Notre Dame hang with Clemson? Obviously, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, T. Higgins, Hunter Renfro, you know, so many skilled players on the Clemson offense, and then all those elite players along the defensive line that are going to be playing at the next level. Can the Notre Dame offense, can Ian Book, can Dexter Williams, can Alzé Mack, you know, Cole Kmet, all those guys, can Notre Dame get anything going in that game to stay with Clemson and all of their firepower on both sides of the ball? And then in the other game, we got some injury question marks. Does Marquise Brown play? He's a big impact for what Oklahoma does. Without him on the field, that changes the narrative a little bit. He's a guy that Alabama would have to pay a lot of defensive attention. It seems like it's kind of trending towards a game time decision, slightly leaning towards him playing, but it's still unknown at this time. I mean, Kyler Murray, obviously Heisman Trophy winner. There's a lot of buzz that NFL teams are trying to convince him to go to the NFL draft and play football. And with the news of Herbert, you know, he might be a first or second round pick. This is going to get real interesting if he goes out and wins this game and maybe Oklahoma wins the national championship. And all of a sudden now he's got first round consideration in the NFL. It's going to be fascinating to see if he has a change of heart in terms of playing baseball, or I should say in playing football over baseball. Obviously, Oklahoma also Trey Sermon on the ground. And then on the other side, Alabama, is Tua healthy enough to play? You know, there's been nothing coming out in terms of an injury report on him. It sounds like he's ready to go, but nothing definitive has been said. Obviously, the ground game, you know, you got Josh Jacobs, who some are saying could be an early entrant into the NFL draft and potentially be a top 100 pick. You got underclassmen Najee Harris. You got senior Damian Harris. You got, you know, Jerry Jeudy, wide receiver, Irv Smith Jr. I mean, so many elite players on both sides of the game there, Oklahoma and Alabama. The intrigue of can Clemson and Notre Dame, can Notre Dame hang with Clemson? Can Alabama's defense shut down the elite offense of Oklahoma? Can Oklahoma slow down the offense of Alabama at all? Fascinating games, big point spreads in both of them, you know, double digits, you know, two touchdowns or so in both of those games. Matt, any thoughts on prospects? Any thoughts on if you think any of the underdogs can pull off the upset?
I think we're going to see a repeat of Alabama versus Clemson. That's what I think.
Again, part three.
Yeah, I think this is going to be part three. And it's like an episodic, almost like it's like every year it's becoming like the do we think Alabama is going to beat Clemson this year? And that's kind of what we're talking about in August. And like that seems to be kind of the fait accompli. And not to mention that let's not push down Oklahoma. I mean, they've been in this game now since the college football playoffs have started. So they've been equally involved long term. So I mean, Oklahoma, Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame. I mean, these are the programs that make the engine of college football run. I'm excited to see all of them play. The guys that I'm really most excited to see about, I mean, the early reports have been Tua coming out and saying he's about 85% to 88%. I don't know exactly where those percentages come from, but he's feeling about, you know, that sounds to me like he's feeling good. He's not feeling very good or 100% healthy. He's feeling good. So what that means and how that translates into playing time, who knows? Let's make no mistake about it. Tua versus Jalen Hurts is a very different Alabama team. So I think the answer to that question is going to be very important. Who is the starting quarterback comes game day? Because that takes the entire complexion and game plan and really does switch it around for Nick Saban, you know, depending upon who his quarterback is. So, you know, if we see a Jalen Hurts come in, just by Jalen Hurts being there, not to say that he's not a great player, but, you know, there's something to be said about having the same quarterback under center all year and what that does for players around him in terms of understanding what their roles are, how to play, you know, what types of affordances and opportunities they have. It's going to change dramatically. Like Jerry Jeudy's like, you know, I got to run this route maybe a little flatter because I know Jalen likes to underthrow it. It changes the dynamics of all those different elements that are woven together into the offensive game plan. And that could be just enough for Kyler Murray and the Oklahoma Sooners to really potentially unseat or upset, you know, the Crimson Tide, despite what their defense is. So it's just, it's something to consider. I do think it's going to end up being Alabama Clemson in the finals, but I do think it's going to be interesting to kind of see how this all plays out. And yeah, Kyler Murray, I think NFL teams are going to say to them, listen, we'll take you number one. How do you feel about that? We'll take you in the top five. If we do that and we guarantee you that money, how do you feel about that? Will you do it? It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating. From no chance of playing football ever again to now potentially winning the Heisman, winning the national title, and teams saying, we'll take you round one, top five, top 10 if you come play football. I mean, what a roller coaster of a ride that would be for Kyler Murray, where he'd really have to sit down and contemplate his future and how he wants to do this. Nonetheless, these games are going to be so fun all weekend. The playoff games, the rest of the bowl games. Make sure you're in front of your TV, DVRing things. So much to learn and gather from all these prospects. And let's close it out with a super fast NFL rookie report. Not going to hit on a lot of guys because I'm going to do a whole recap show following the season as well. Potentially one with a special guest as well who's been a regular on the show over the last few years. But a couple of names I want to make note of, Matt, and I want to bring you in on. Philip Lindsay suffered a serious injury. Might be out the entire offseason. Wanted to get your thoughts on that, and in particular, most likely a complete change over in his coaching, the coaching there in Denver. What if anything you think that does in terms of his dynasty value? I know you're a guy who is a fan of Lindsay. You have him in some dynasty settings. So curious to get your take on Lindsay, the injury, missing most of the offseason work, expected to hopefully be ready for training camp. But if with a new coaching staff there, another young running back there in Royce Freeman, Matt, any concerns about Lindsay moving forward with all that kind of emerging here at the end of the year? The injury, a whole new upheaval probably in Denver's offensive philosophy with a new coordinator and a new coach probably coming in.
So to start with the upheaval in the philosophy and the coaching, I think that that's a good thing. I think it really has, but I think it will be a good thing because I think if most people would be critical of Philip Lindsay in one way this particular season, it would be that they didn't use him enough, if that makes sense. It's that they didn't get him enough touches, that he should have had even more, and that they should have been developing even more touches for their explosive player in this offense, considering the way the personnel was constructed. So in one respect, I'll say coaching changes, I'm open to it. I'm sure everybody in the dynasty world or that realm should be open to it as well, because I want to see Philip Lindsay more with the ball in his hands. Now, forgive me if I'm incorrect. And again, I'm not late to the party, but I saw this passing. So I'm going to ask you, it's a wrist injury, correct?
Yes.
So with the wrist injury, how do I think that affects his play style? I think he wasn't really used that much in the receiving game. And I think that that's a place where he could still develop. So I'm going to say not too concerned. And again, I know there's a lengthy process that goes with it, and I know the off-season training is something people are concerned about, but consider the facets of what makes him a dynamic player. It has a lot to do with his leg feeding the bear, so to speak. It's not really about his wrist. And I'm not saying the wrist isn't an important part of his overall health. What I'm just saying is that when you consider what he does on the field, I would say if we were talking about ankle injuries, leg injuries, things of that nature, I think there would be a level of greater concern. I am saying that he could still do, even away from the facility, even if he's not being a part of every single OTA because of the worry that they have maybe for a contact re-injury of some kind. You know, there is a sense that, you know, he could have an opportunity to potentially still train, still stay in great shape, and still be ready as soon as spring OTAs are ready to go.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you. I think the coaching change could do benefits for him, getting him the ball more in open space, being more creative with him, better quarterback play if they upgrade from Case Keenum. I think it'd all be intriguing things. Not being tied to a coaching staff, though, you know, again, it could start a fresh, clean slate for Royce Freeman that maybe he gets an opportunity to kind of steal that job back. But I think when push comes to shove, the talent of Philip Lindsay will rise, and what he can do, the mismatches that he creates in the modern day NFL.
He's so explosive, Paul.
He's explosive.
I mean, he's so explosive. Honest to God. I mean, I mean that. I've watched him play during the last couple of weeks as I finally had a chance to watch games again more frequently. He's so explosive through the hole. That explosive strength that he has to accelerate quickly is just so incredibly obvious. And he's playing against guys that are, if not just as fast as him and skillful as him. So to see that type of differential in terms of the display of ability, I would be shocked if given what he'd proven this year that he takes a backseat to anybody next year.
Yeah, and he runs tough and physical. He reminds me of Devontae Freeman. That is a big-time compliment. He reminds me of Devontae Freeman. I'm sure Royce Freeman will be a part of a committee, but I think Lindsey will be a guy who leads that team in touches, and he's in that 15 to 17 range. And if Lindsey's getting 15 to 17 touches, he's going to be an impactful player for sure. And then two pass catchers, Matt, and we'll end it on there. And one of them I know you're a fan of, so I really want to bring you right in. DeShaun Hamilton has really started to make a name for himself over the last couple weeks due to Emmanuel Sanders going down with an injury. Hamilton has went right into the slot where we both said that's where he wins best at, and he has looked really impressive. He's gotten heavily targeted, running all the routes that Emmanuel Sanders was running. I kind of think that, you know, listen, I know Courtland Sutton is the player that's going to draw more attention, but I'm just as excited for in Denver, if I was a Denver fan, of what I think DeShaun Hamilton could be inside the slot as well. I think going into next year, I think he could potentially lead that team in receptions inside in the slot there and be a really impactful player. And right now, I think the value on Courtland Sutton, fairly and rightfully so, is a first-round rookie pick, and I would be willing to buy for that. I am really going to be scouring all my dynasty leagues to see what the cost on DeShaun Hamilton would be. And if it's a late second round pick, maybe even a mid second round pick, and if it's an early third round pick, definitively I'm going to be buying this offseason. Thoughts on Hamilton, the player, or the landing spot?
No, I mean, I feel like we've talked about it ad nauseum. I mean, and I'm not saying that, you know, we knew this was going to happen. It's just that we knew that the deck was stacked in his favor for if the opportunity came, if Emmanuel Sanders, something happened per se, and it did, that he would have an opportunity to come out there and show what he could do. And it's just that he is what I think we need to look for this year as we're starting to scout wide receivers. I think we need to really remember that, you know, it's about skill. It's about what they do skillfully on the field, how they separate. It's about the process of how they solve the problems of their routes throughout their route tree, how they do it through the entire route, from their release throughout their vertical stem at the top of their route, how they do it within context of everybody around them. So it's just something to really keep in mind. And I think DeShaun Hamilton is really a big part of that.
Yeah, and the last player I'll bring up, and then we'll wrap it up, I'll come back to you for your parting shot, is Christopher Herndon continues to play as the best rookie tight end in this class, and he's a guy that Sam Darnold, I think, is really going to be a big fan of next season. I think he's going to be one of the main guys Darnold looks for. Christopher Herndon has had a fantastic freshman year as a rookie tight end. He was a guy I was a big, big fan of, but we didn't see much in the pre-draft process. I think he ended up going in the fourth round, and I think the Jets got a steal. I think he's going to be a fixture in that offense. I think they need to go out and get, you know, a big time running back to pair with Elijah McGuire, and they need to get one other wide receiver to pair with Robbie Anderson. But I think Christopher Herndon is going to be a long-term piece there for the Jets and for that offense. And I think he's a guy who could still be bought on the cheap because he was a day three pick. People are still not looking at him, I think, as they should, but I think he's a name, an intriguing buy in Dynasty right now in two tight end leagues and tight end premium leagues. And I think he's going to be a fixture there with Sam Darnold and that Jets offense moving forward. So there it is, the NFL Rookie Report for week 16. Upcoming, so much to look forward to with the bowl games, the closeout of the NFL season. I'm just excited for it. Matt, any final parting shots here before we wrap it up?
No, listen, I mean, I'm excited as it comes when it comes to this stuff because, again, you know, none of us sit here and claim to know anything. We're just all trying to kind of, as Sigmund Bloom would say, peek through keyholes, right? I mean, that's what we're trying to do. You know, we'll never really understand the natural world around us completely. So when we're watching players perform on the football field, we can only begin to speculate what this says about what they'll be at the next level. So as you watch bowl games, you're always going to have an incomplete picture. But that's, you know what? That's all we have. And that's why it makes this discussion so incredible. And that's why we welcome you to reach out to us on Twitter, talk to us on Twitter, you know, kind of, what do you see? Your eyes are as good as ours. You see the same stuff we do. There's no difference in what you're seeing versus what we're seeing. And that's why we love this opportunity to share these ideas with you. It's this opportunity to share that really gives us some of the best insight ever out there. So honestly, this is more of a celebratory kind of resounding response to everybody out there that are listeners and how amazing you guys are in terms of really making this process so passionate and exciting for us. And Paul, just one last thing before we go. the guys that I would be kind of throwing out there as players that we should be watching for if you're in dynasty drafts, guys that I've stacked my rosters with. Paul will tell you I have more injured reserve players than actual players right now as I was finishing out the season. I'm stockpiling people that dropped Deshaun Hamilton. Somebody dropped him earlier. That's why I have him. So I picked him up. I have Trey Quinn. Somebody got rid of him. I'm sticking him on the IR. I think he's a guy to keep in mind. John Kelly. Drop him if you want. I think John Kelly is somebody that's waiting to happen in LA sooner rather than later. So I have him. I've stacked him up somewhere. Robert Foster. If he's still somewhere available, go and put him on a roster. Why not? Let's see what happens. You know, and to Paul's point, I think Christopher Herndon was a great call because I took Christopher Herndon in a league. I paid, you know, fab budget for him. I think I emptied my entire fab budget for him to pick him up because he was a guy that I think that, you know, we didn't know if it was going to really stick, what was going to happen, and here and there. And Paul's been nothing but resolute about what he thought he would do. And I own him on my team. I picked him up. So Will Dissly, there's a blast from the past. He's a tight end that we had huge, huge returns on earlier this year, only to see injury kind of bite him that we didn't see him come back this year. But maybe he's the guy you stack up and put in your roster. Start using your rosters, is my point, as a way to start kind of being the prognosticator and having some fun with those guys that are out there. Because you know what? If you have the room, Justin Watson, throw him on your roster. Throw him on your roster. What's the worst that can happen? See what happens in the offseason. You never know how fortunes can change.
Yeah, absolutely. Great final point there by Matt to utilize your roster. Don't keep a mediocre veteran wide receiver or running back on your dynasty roster at this point who's not going to be of any use to you during the offseason. Release those guys. Go out and sign guys who are injured, who are rookies who haven't had a chance yet, and fill your roster that way because the upside is much greater in
Richie James.
Richie James. Guys like that for sure. So there it is. On behalf of Matt, on behalf of our sound and tech engineer, David Nakano, and myself, enjoy the games upcoming, and we look forward next time taking you from Saturday to Sunday.